It's Jim, and this is season 7 of Uncle Jim's World of Bonds. Even Lost only made it to 6 seasons, so going well. It's the 25th of April 2022. This is for professional investors only. Never ever investment advice. I hope you had good Easter holidays. I was in Iceland. If you've watched The Northman, it's out in the cinemas at the moment. Some great shots of Icelandic countryside there. My wife gave the film 0 out of 10. I thought it was a bit better than that, maybe a 6 or a 7. Worth a watch anyway. Had me thinking about the 2008 Icelandic banking crisis, not least because I had some money in iSave alongside, I think, about 500,000 overseas depositors. And that went into a bank run, as you probably know, and there was a sweaty moment where Iceland decided it wasn't going to fulfil its deposit guarantees on that, but the UK government thankfully stepped in and did. But if you remember, there was a huge economic boom in Iceland, so every man and his dog suddenly became an entrepreneur. You might have been working on a fishing boat, but suddenly you owned multiple properties and a share in Hamleys or whatever it was at the time. So big banks, Landsbanki or Landsbanki, Kaupthing, Glitner. I think at one stage there were about 50 billion of overseas liabilities, which was 7 times Icelandic GDP. So eventually, with a big depreciation of the krona, when people started worrying about getting their money back on those deposits, 35% depreciation, there was bank runs and so forth, and it ended with all of those Icelandic banks being nationalised and the IMF stepping in. I think the IMF was still there until 2017, and exchange controls and so forth remained in place for over a decade. So interesting place, good to reminisce about that. Part of the global banking crisis, really, but something specifically Icelandic about it as well. While I was there, you know, reading Icelandic newspapers, all in English, of course, the ones I read anyway, they are thinking about joining the EU at the moment. And it reminded me also that they have one of their major political parties is the so-called Pirate Party, that actually dresses up as pirates and have been senior in government and opposition for quite a long time, but may well join the EU at some stage. The big news overnight was also about the EU, which was Macron winning 58.2% of the presidential vote in France. Still means that 42% of French voters went to the far right, Marine Le Pen, a very anti-EU party in particular, other far right views as well. So not out of the woods, and Macron still got the French sort of parliamentary elections to navigate in a few weeks' time. So still some room for banana skins there, but for the markets and for French politics, a Le Pen win would have been a significant shock today, and we haven't got that. We said that the euro is weaker, so it hasn't bounced and rallied on the news of at least some stability in a very unstable world. Since we've been away, I guess the big news has been around rates and government bonds. In particular, it's been about real yields, so inflation-adjusted yields. So you can look at these either by taking nominal yields and subtracting current levels of inflation. But as we all know, that's transitory. So the best way to do it is really look at inflation-linked bond yields, look at TIPS yields in the US. So, you know, we got down to about minus 1.2% for 10-year US TIPS real yields earlier this year. Last week, we got to zero. So that's a significant rise. And people worry about this or talk about this because this is what's perceived to be important for equity markets and other risk assets. You price your cost of capital really on the real yield. If you're a company, you can cope with the inflation component of nominal yields going up because generally companies can put up prices, but the real yield represents the real underlying cost of capital to your business, and that's gone up by 120 basis points at 10 years. Nominal yields, of course, have also gone up, so some round numberitis levels last week. So we got to 3% for 30-year US Treasuries, we got to 2% for 30-year gilts in the UK. So a generalised rise in yield. We have started this week very much on a risk-off tone, however. So things have rallied back in government bond land. Those 30-year US Treasuries are back down below 2.9, so at 2.89% today. This is really about the Chinese COVID situation. You know that Shanghai's been in severe and strict lockdown as they aim for zero COVID in a world where it's Omicron and that little germ can get pretty much anywhere. So even a lockdown isn't going to result in zero COVID. But now Beijing appears to be going into lockdown. And this is having worries about global growth and supply chains and so forth. So looking at China specifically overnight, their stock market's down nearly 3%. And oil globally is down back below $100 a barrel. Other thing to note is that the Chinese currency, having been extremely strong for most of the past year or so, thanks in part due to China joining global government bond indices with a weighting of around about 5%, that started to sell off quite significantly as well over the past couple of weeks. So in the US, we're now getting talk following the inflation outlook, you know, inflation up above 8% on the headline levels there and in the UK and rising rapidly elsewhere in the world. I think look at PPI in Germany, I think it's running at 30% a year, the producer price inflation. But thinking about the US in specifically, you have people like Jimmy Bullard, not the guy from Soccer AM, but one of the Fed members, talking about a 75 basis point hike next time out. And certainly, you know, we've got over 2% of rate hikes priced in for the rest of the year. And people asking why, if you're a central banker, don't you just get to 2.5% really quickly? What's the benefit to kind of trickling it out over the course of the year? And it's a question I don't really know the answer to. If, you know, if you think that bond markets are right and pricing in 2.5% rates in January next year, why don't you just go there now rather than trickle it out? I guess it allows central bankers to some flexibility to change their mind if things go wrong in the interim. But people are starting to talk about significant numbers of rate hikes over the course of the year, despite, I think, what's also out there in terms of risks to the economy and talk about recession and talk about risk assets doing badly. But a Goldman Sachs note out today saying that growth is going to be really quite strong. They're talking about the Fed's forecast for growth next year, for the rest of this year, about 2.8%. And to get it back to trend at around 2, you would need another 100 basis points on 10-year US Treasury bond yields and another 10% off stock markets in terms of financial conditions to get to where they think inflation needs to be. My favourite measure, as we've talked about before, the 10-year forward rate. So that's what the market's yield curve is telling you 10-year Treasuries are going to be in 2032, i.e. that's really telling you what the average Fed funds rate is going to be between 2032 and 2042. And if you look at the moment, the median Fed dot, when they make their forecast, says that the average Fed funds rate between that period is going to be something like 2.5%. The most hawkish Fed member is talking about 3%. But US Treasury bond markets are saying they're going to be 3.4%. That's either telling you that bond markets are wrongly priced, that they're cheap now, and potentially nearly 100 basis points cheap at that forward rate if the Fed median Fed dot at 2.5% is right. So it could be that long-dated bonds are really cheap, or that yield curves are steeper than they should be. Or it's telling you that the Fed is likely to raise its long-term expectations of neutrality, of where the long-term terminal rate would be. And it's probably a mixture of two, of the two things, as it always is in these situations. Right, moving on to other bits of the bond world since we've been away. Important that Italy's bond yield went above its average cost of debt last week. This is quite rare. For the last a long period of time, apart from a few little blips, Italian government bond yields have been below its average cost of debt, i.e. the stock of all the existing debt that Italy has. The cost of that debt, i.e. the old-fashioned higher bond coupons that those bonds have been higher than the current Italian bond yield. And we use the 7-year bond yield here because that represents the kind of average maturity of Italian debt, or average duration of Italian debt. Now it's gone above, and as I say, that's quite rare, and it means that any new debt issued with a yield of current yields above that average cost of debt will increase the average cost of debt. So that's not the end of the world, as long as the average cost of debt remains below long-term growth, nominal growth in the US, in Italy. So when we look at potential growth rates in Italy, somewhere between 0.5% and inflation, assuming the ECB hits inflation target of 2%, you're talking of somewhere like 2 to 2.5% for nominal long-term growth, potential growth in Italy. And we're kind of on that level now for the cost of debt. And so we're kind of in a neutral position. But if Italian bond yields went up to, say, 3%, for instance, that would mean that you would expect the debt burden in Italy to start rising. So important to keep an eye on. At the moment, not a terrible worry, but an unusual situation where we do have a higher bond yield than the average cost of debt in Italy. Going to finish quickly then. Currencies, as I mentioned, the renminbi, the yuan in China, had been strong. It's now selling off. The yen is the other one that we should talk about. On fundamentals, on your Big Mac index, probably PPP, purchasing power parity, a fundamental measure of valuation, the yen to the US dollar should be something like 80. In fact, it's getting up towards 130. So massively cheap fundamentally on that PPP measure of valuation. But it's being driven at the moment by yield differentials. The Japanese Bank of Japan is very much sticking to yield curve control, i.e. keeping 10-year JGB yields at 25 basis points in a world where government bond yields everywhere else in developed markets are going up sharply day after day after day. So JGB yields, interest rates in Japan, are way lower than they are anywhere else in the world still, and that's meant that the yen has looked really unattractive. You can get much higher yields elsewhere. Also, the fundamentals don't help Japan being a big oil importer, although the recent weakness in oil relative to where it has been is probably a bit helpful. So that's another of the big stories. Finish on credit. Very, very weak week last week. Since January, high yield in Europe has gone from 250 to around about 400 where we are now. It has been slightly higher. It got to 420 a month or so ago. But since the start of April, it's gone from 325 to 400, and we're weakening every day at the moment. Investment grades weakened from below 50 to nearly 80 in US investment grade credit default indices, and emerging markets 15 basis points wider last week, with names like Pemex a lot wider too. So it feels nasty out there. It feels like there's some pressure being released in markets, and things are blowing out somewhat in credit in particular. And while we've got all this rate hiking expectation out there, we mustn't forget that fundamentally, with the inflation that we do have out there as well, consumer confidence in areas like the UK in particular is falling off a cliff. And I think that people are pointing at UK consumer confidence with the utility bill hikes, with what's going on in politics, and all the other, you know, things like Brexit-related issues, etc., etc. It's led to a huge collapse in UK consumer confidence, to the extent that although we had some hawkishness from the Bank of England last week, there's also some risk of recession here in the UK later this year. So a fairly bleak global situation with a tug of war between the high inflation rates and worries about growth persisting. Right, welcome to season 7. Speak to you soon. Bye.